If you could have dinner with anyone, living or dead, who would you choose?
Kylie Minogue.
Oh.
Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, God, I wouldn't have a clue.
I know, straight up. Paul Hogan.
Kim Kardashian.
No, no, no.
I'd like to have dinner with Justin Bieber.
What? He's not coming to my house.
No,
I'd have Bob Hawke.
Dave Hughes.
Barry Humphries.
Jimi Hendrix.
People who have made a difference in the world, maybe Nelson Mandela at the dinner table.
I don't know what he's going to say. I'm scared.
If you could have dinner with anyone in the world,
oh,
who would you choose?
Probably our whole family, like a whole extended family.
Mum and Dad.
Mum and Dad.
Does it have to be a celebrity? Could it be family?
We love it. We talk about how school is. We ask Mum and Dad how their day was.
Family.
Yeah, Mum and Dad.
Family. Yeah.
Who would you like to have dinner with? They just want to be with us while they're eating food, which is pretty cool.
They see us above everything. I'm going to get...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a message in it for me.
Yeah.
What are we having for dinner?
I just saw that on Facebook the other day, and it actually just brought me to tears because I thought, you know, it's so true. As adults, we just think about all these amazing big people, and our kids just want to spend time with us. I thought that was really profound. I always find myself in this place because when, you know, you think, gosh, I have 45 minutes or an hour, what can I say? You know, that's, and we always just pray, and we don't always have a formula either, so we don't know what each other is going to talk about. So I just love the way the Lord puts this together. But this time, I just really just felt like I should just be super practical. And I talked to Jen, and this is my daughter Jenny, by the way, just in case I always refer to her, but this is my youngest daughter Jen. And just to give you background, I have four kids, and they are now 31, 29, 27, and 25. So we're kind of at the odd years. All four of them got married in 3 years. And they all married Athey Quakers, and and not only that, but all my, I don't call them my sons-in-laws usually, they're my boys, but the three boys that joined our family used to all be roommates, so everybody knows each other really well, and the girl that Paul married is Jenny's best friend, and so anyway, I am a super blessed lady, so it's really cool. But I just wanted to give that because I just realized that maybe we didn't actually introduce ourselves and how many kids we all have. Judy has two children and three grandchildren, and both her kids are married, and Tani has two girls and six grandchildren, and they're also married, so that's where we're at. And I am a grandma too now of one and another one on the way, so we're very blessed. But you know, and so I've been thinking about this, and it doesn't matter where I started, it always comes back to the same thing, that unless you have the Lord in your life, and unless you have the Lord helping you raise your kids, you're going to be on an endless quest. And it's actually a meaningless quest. Because people ask, you know, how do you have children that love the Lord? How does Judy have four children that all love the Lord? How? And we will all give you an answer that you raise your children on your knees. Because none of us have this figured out. None of us are, you know, the born super moms and the superstars. And, you know, but we have the Lord. And there's just nothing that that we can do besides Him in raising these kids. So I know we always go back to that, but it's the absolute 100% truth. I mean, it's just you have to have that in your life foremost for you to do a good job. The Lord has to be your number one in your life for it to be a good job. And not even number one as far as time, but it's who you are as a person. So, because sometimes we can, like Brett talked about, you have a little waffle, and this little waffle is just spending time with the Lord, and this little waffle is for cooking, and this little waffle is for cleaning, but the Lord's got to be in all of it, otherwise it doesn't work. And the scripture verse that I felt that really encapsulated that is Psalm 127, and if you'd like to turn to that, then you're welcome to. Just as I have a Kleenex, for some reason, I always get the sniffles. 127, and it says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it." Thanks, Sadie. Thank you. So, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early or to retire late or to eat the bread of painful labor. For he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one youth. How blessed is the man or woman whose quiver is full of them. And I really, the New Living Testament said, unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. And I think this is just in a really great scripture to just really think about, that we really do need the Lord in our home. We really do need to work hard for him, and that none of this is wasted. You know, the big question is really, what kind of a home do you really want? I grew up in a very difficult home. It was kind of like a landmine field, and you never quite knew when the landmine was going to go off. And it's hard growing up like that, because you never knew. I mean, sometimes things are fine, and then all of a sudden things weren't fine. You know, and all of a sudden, it not only wasn't it fine, it was hugely not fine. But you never know. You never knew. It's like landmines. You never know when you're going to stand on one, and you never know when it's going to go off. So it always made my life very unpredictable. You're always like walking on eggshells, and because you never know. So when I knew that I wanted kids and raised kids, it's like, I don't want to have a home like that. You know, I want a home where my kids just know, that we all know, we understand the rules, we understand. I wanted my home to be a loving home. I didn't want to be fighting. I didn't want there to be all these things in my home. I didn't want my home to be like the home that I grew up in. And in my mind, when I was a young girl, I already made that decision that when I grew up, I wasn't going to do that. And you know, we all have those decisions. We all have to kind of think about, What kind of home do we want? You know, what is the pulse of your home? And really, the Lord is in it. Then, you know, you already. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so for me to have the Lord as the head over my home and in my home, that already sets the right tempo. And that was hugely important to me as well. You know, the other thought that you have while you're creating your home and while you're raising your children is, what kind of kids do you want to send out into the world? And we forget how much influence we have on our children. You know, we forget that what we decide, how we decide to run our homes and how we decide to raise our children greatly impacts them for the rest of their life. And it starts when they're little. It's not when they're 9 or 10. It starts when they're already just little people. You know? And I think it's really important that you as moms, that you realize that, hey, I'm the one that answers these questions. I'm the one that sets the tone in the home. I'm the one that's responsible for making these things happen. And it really boils down to discipline. But I think it's a twofold discipline, because I wrote here that first, mom has to be disciplined, and that she needs to see and live out her God-given leadership role. Because the Lord just gives all of us these beautiful children, and he asks us to raise them. And he, if you're fortunate, you get to stay at home. And like Debbie mentioned last week, what's the dream job? You know? And our dream job should be to raise these beautiful kids that the Lord's given us. That should be our dream job. And it's not an easy job. We all know that. I mean, there's no denying that it's not an easy job. But the Lord says in Deuteronomy 10, 12 through 13, "And now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all of his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord with all your heart and all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees that I'm giving you today for your own good." And I love that, because he's asking us to serve him in raising these children with all our heart, with all of our souls, with all of ourselves, not just some of it, or like, well, I'm just going to do this kind of part-time and they're really a bit of a pain, and it's really kind of inconvenient to have these kids, because, you know, and we hear this quite a bit. And really, I think that if you have children and the Lord's giving you these kids, that he's asking us to serve him and to serve them with all our hearts and all of our souls, and that we're serving him as we're doing it. I think if you think of it that way, then, you know, it maybe it's a little bit overwhelming, but in some sense too, it's this is what we get to do. We get to do this. We don't, it's a privilege to raise these kids. It's an honor to raise these kids. You know, when we ourselves aren't disciplined to do this job correctly, then how on earth can we set an example to our children to be disciplined? You know, so I think it really, I'm encouraging you to really think about your role as mom. You know, am I giving my all to this? Am I giving everything that I have to this? Am I really thinking about my home? Am I really investing myself in my home? Is my home a place where my children really want to be, where my husband really wants to be? You know, because you get to have them for the next 18 years or 20 years, so make it a refuge, make it a place where they really, really want to be. And we all have children that now have left. You still want them to come home after they've left. You still want them to feel like, you know, and even though they have their own homes, they still say, "Hey, mom, I'd like to come home," and this and that and the other. What a blessing that is as a mom, as an empty nester, you know, that your kids still want to come back because it's a place where they like to be. These are the kind of things that you're establishing now. When your kids are little, or if you haven't established or you haven't really thought this through, then start it. Start thinking it through, you know. You have to have your husband on the same page with you. We have questions, even in our little questions. You know, my husband and I are not on the same page. And the answer to that is, if you have marriage issues, they need to make an appointment with Judy, you know, and talk about if there's marriage issues, you know. But I think that it's really important that you and your husband get to the stage very early on how you want things to look in your home, and that you are completely in agreement on the very first thing that we're talking about. And it's so important that you guys have this figured out early. Kids absolutely know when parents are divided. They will play you against each other. It just causes problems in the home. And if you want a home that's a sanctuary, this is an important component that you really need to figure out. You really need to figure it out soon, and come to, and you think, well, okay, what is that? What is that? But it's just basic rules. It's basic boundaries, discipline rules, bedtime rules. You know, how are we going to handle it when we go to mother-in-law's and this happens? How are we going to handle it if, you know, we go to the grocery store, or how are we going to, all of these things you can address ahead of time, and that you and your husband, and not like, honey, this is the way it's going to be, because that doesn't work. You can't be the boss over your husband and just expect him to step in line with the program. It doesn't work that way. Men don't appreciate it. You're not respecting them. And it's not teamwork like that. So really get to the point. And it might mean, you know, you might not follow your own inclination, but that you agree to agree. And if he doesn't do it the way you think that he ought to, then you talk about it afterwards. You never confront him at the point in time and say, honey, this is not what we talked about. You know, we need it. It's like, no, you agree with us all behind, so that kids always see a united front. This is it. You know, mom and dad, there's no bridge, there's no gap. This is what we're going to be doing. And I think, too, it helps the men feel included, because sometimes us moms, and I was actually a little bit at fault with this, where, you know, especially if your husband's gone a lot, then, you know, you can just kind of take over the roost, and this is the way it goes. Men feel like they're on the outskirts all the time, just looking in. That's not a good place to be. So I think it's really, really important. And that you ask his advice. We're emotional beings. And when you get wrapped up with all these little people, and you yourself start getting emotional, it's so nice to call the left brain guy and say, hey, this is what's going on today. And he will just sort it out for you within a couple of minutes. Because, oh, that's easy. You just do this, and you do that, and you do the other. And it's like, oh, how come I didn't think about that, you know? And that's what's great about having guys. So those are really huge components. You know, we're talking about discipline, and it's actually a Caesar Milan quote, but it's like, if you only give 80% leadership to a dog, but I thought about this for a child, it's the same principle. If you only give 80% leadership, the child will give you 80% following, and the other 20% of the time he'll run the show. And if you give your child any opportunity for him to lead, he'll take it. And it's true. You know, and that's where our discipline ourselves comes in, is that we need to be disciplined to give 100% leadership. And it takes work. And I know It's not like we don't understand that, because everyone in this room understands that. I mean, it takes a lot of work. And, you know, and especially at the end of the day and you're trying to cook and you're trying to do stuff and things are falling apart, to be 100% leadership in that leadership role and to be sorting things out 100% of the time, it's a lot. And but the Lord says in Psalms 32:8, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go, and I will counsel you with my eye upon it. And I love that, and it's true, because I think even when we're so tired and we're so weary, the Lord's absolutely there to help you and to help you just say, Lord, I need a burst of energy to get through the 5 o'clock hour, the 5 to 6, or getting the kids to bed, or whatever it is. Because the minute mom signs out, you've lost your footing. You've lost everything that you've tried to gain the whole day, because you, at some point, you're like, you know what, I'm just too tired. This is too much. It's like, you can't do that. So mom, that's why I said it's a twofold discipline, because we have to be disciplined ourselves to be able to discipline our children. The next biggest thing is that your children need to be disciplined. They want to be disciplined. And it's kind of an ironic thing, but Judy talked about this, about how kids they need boundaries. They need to know where they can push things out. And even when they're little, they'll push it out a little bit. When they get bigger, they'll push it out more and further. And it's like, how far can I go? But when they push it out, they realize this is where I'm safe. I'm safe within these boundaries. This is where I'm going to feel comfortable. This is where I know that, and they do, they feel much more comfortable. You're going to have kids, and I'm going to break this down in a little bit, different personalities that push those boundaries a whole lot harder than other kids, and they need to know, like my son Paul, it's like he had to know every fine, minute detail of every rule and where it was for him to feel good. And you have other kids like Amanda. She didn't really care. It didn't matter to her that much. But they were still in place. So we need to make sure that you discipline is 100% of what we're going to be talking about from here on out. You know, we teach our kids everything. We don't think about it, but we teach them morals, we teach them values, we teach them integrity, we teach them purity, we teach them self-control, we teach them patience, we teach them loving kindness, we teach them all these things. And you know, part of it is like, well, that's a little overwhelming too, but it's Lord's right there. He promises that he's going to be right there with you. But the middle component, all of that is discipline, because if you don't discipline your children, they don't learn self-control. If you don't discipline them, they don't learn integrity. They don't learn a whole lot of things if they're not disciplined properly and they don't have those correct boundaries. So it's just really, really important. And, you know, our main scripture verse is to train up a child the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And this is true. And these are things that you're teaching your kids now. They carry with them for the rest of your life. And I've mentioned it before, and we did a whole teaching series, gosh, it's been a few years ago, when my kids were all getting married, and I realized as they're walking down the aisle that you have no more to give them because they've made their choice. And they're walking down the aisle, and you just pray that you've done everything that you could to make them an amazing husband or an amazing wife, that they will raise their children in a godly way. Because once they walk down that aisle, it's the end of that journey. And right now, when you have, you know, 6 months old and 1 year old and 2 years old and 5 years old, you don't think about that. But everything that you're doing now creates that day and makes that helps them make the choices, helps them decide who they're going to marry, helps them decide to stay pure, helps them to decide, hey, I'm not even going to kiss them until I get a ring on my finger, or whatever those things are. These are all things that we influence. It's so important. And so I can't stress enough, really, how important it is, your role that you have now, and that you 100% invest in these beautiful kids that you have. The fundamental thing is that, mom, you need to put in 100%, all your heart, all your soul, put all of it in there, and that you're disciplined in disciplining and raising these kids. When you break it down, and I think you've already heard us say this quite a bit in our Q&A, that I think the biggest rule in disciplining, the number one rule, is to be 100% consistent. Because if you leave a little tiny crack open in the door, those kids are going to take it, and they're going to, again, like it said earlier, you know, if you're not a leader, they're not going to follow. If you only do it 80% of the time, they might listen to you 80% of the time or less. And it's just super important that that you discipline them 100% of the time, not 80% of the time, not even 90% of the time. 100% of the time. And I've shared this story before, but it's one of those stories that super profound for me. Elisa and I, when we first started going to mom's homes, we were visiting this mom, and she had a little boy and a little girl. She was really struggling just in her own life and as a mom and all that. So we actually went to see her for a long period of time, every other week. And it got to the point, though, when the kids were getting a little too old to always be listening in. And so we arranged for to come over at nap time because we were kind of going to get into some harder things. And so she sent her kids, put her kids for nap time to bed. And we sat outside because we really didn't want little ears to hear what we were talking about. And 5 minutes later, the little girl, downstairs, mom, you know. And so mom was on it within a second. And I told you to go upstairs, blah, 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 blah. And you go put your nose in the corner and blah, blah, you know. Anyway, so 5 minutes later, okay, I'm sorry, mommy. Okay, go upstairs. Now you go to bed. Okay, mommy. So 5 minutes later, she's back downstairs again. And you're like, whoa, okay. And so so it elevated because now we're going to get a spank. And so out came the wooden spoon and had the whole, you know, I mean, she did the whole thing about the whole spanking, and she gets a spank and wow, crying and blah, 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 back upstairs. And okay, so we sit down. It's almost like every time, like, okay. And this little pumpkins comes running back downstairs again. Now she's about 3 or 4. I mean, she's, but still. So now I'm just like, whoa, mom's getting an A for this. But this kiddo just keeps coming downstairs. So we got to about the fifth time. You're a little bit confused because it's like, why is this child is really getting disciplined and she keeps choosing to come downstairs? So by now I'm like, can I just take over for a second? She said, yeah. I said, okay. So I go down to the 3-year-old level and I get in her grill. I'm like, you get yourself upstairs and don't even think about coming downstairs. And I had my mom voice on, and I was serious because, you know, I was serious too, because by now you're like, We've spent 30 minutes just watching this thing go by, you know. And so I'm like, and she walks up the stairs, you know, and I was like, don't even think about moving, and you know. And I mean, I didn't touch her, I didn't yell at her, but I was just like, you know. And so she's like, I said, don't even talk to your brother. No, okay, all right. So anyway, I closed the door. I stand behind the door, and, you know, I gave her like 2 seconds. I opened the door and I said, I'm here still, you know, and, you know, kind of a thing. And so anyway, we go downstairs, and then the mom's like, yeah, she goes, I know. She says, you know, eventually I just go ahead and let her watch a movie. So it's, you're just like, wow. So the kid's willing to go through all of that because she knows at the end of the run, she's going to get to sit and do exactly what she wants. So here's a mom who's doing amazing 98% of her journey with this child, but the last 2%, the kid still wins. Those are the kind of things that we're talking about, because that's what I mean by 100% consistent. The way I thought about it a little bit was like, I said that discipline is like Jenga blocks. I think that's what they're called. They're those little wooden blocks that you stack on top of each other, you know. And because to me is, this is a rule of the home, and this is a rule. You put it down. It stays there. It's not going to shift. It needs to stay there. Here's another rule. The rule is we don't throw a ball in the house. We don't throw balls. In their house, they throw balls because she's married to Kaipo. So that rule doesn't apply in her house. But in my house, there was no balls. You don't throw balls in the house. That's it, you know. There was other rules that, you know, that we don't use the word stupid, or you don't use the word shut up, or you don't use, you know, potty mouth. Those are rules that we don't do. We had simple things I put on the coffee table. Those are no touching. And they're little people, but you're not going to touch that. It's a candle. It's not worth anything. But I don't want you touching that. And that's it. Finished. End of story. So those are the rules that need to be put in place, and they need to stay there. So next time Junior comes along and touches a candle, you're like, hey, that, you're not supposed to touch that, are you? No. Hello? And so, but the thing is, that rule's in place 100% of the time. It can't be in place, like the disciplining in the movie, 80% of the time or 90% of the time. It's 100% of the time. So if you make it a basic rule, just keep it as a rule. Make everybody's life easy. That's just the way it is. Finished. That's it. It's actually quite easy. Because if you set things up that way, then a kid decides to touch it anyway. It's their choice. And it's like, you know, it's a rule, so why'd you do that? Well, and it's like, you choose to disobey, you will get disciplined for it. I'm making it sound easy, because really, if you set it up that way, it is easy. Because if it's not a landmine field like I grew up in, right? Because you never know when you're going to step on it. If the rules are in place, and you just make it a rule every single time, and then they choose to break a rule or to not listen or to disobey or whatever it is, then it's their choice. There's no guesswork. It takes all the guesswork out of it, and it makes it so much easier for you as moms to just put simple things in place. But it's that way 100% of the time. It's like that 7 in the morning, or it's 7 at night, or at midnight, it's still that way. It doesn't matter, because that's the way it is. I think it makes life so much easier for all the kids to understand this is what we do this, but we don't do that. We do this, but we don't do that. we do this. And it's just easy that way. There's no guessing. There's no trying to figure it out. We come from the James Dobson era where I loved it. With all the children, it's an easy choice between, is it willful disobedience or childish irresponsibility? And doesn't matter what the kids do, usually they fall in either one of those camps. And as moms, our intuition, we know whether or not it was just a silly, silly little thing that they did because they're a kid, or if they're looking you in the eye and going like this, you know. And I don't know how I'm doing on time. If you have those basic rules in place and then they choose to disobey, it makes it really easier for us moms to not be disciplining with emotion, but we're just disciplining with cold, hard facts. It's kind of like, we're not supposed to do this. We are allowed to do this. If you choose to do this, you will get disciplined. That's simple. It's almost that simple. I think that it just makes our days go better when it's more defined like that. One of the big questions we always get is, when do you spank? You know, when we're talking about the disciplining, what does that look like? You know, I'm very grateful, like I said last time, because I get to relive these younger years through Jenny and Kiana now, and it's just such a reminder of what it like used to be like in those days. And I think I'll go back a little bit. I have four kids. I had all four of them in 5.5 years, so they're very close together. Dawn and Amanda, 18 months apart. Then I had a little tiny break, and then I think 22 months or something, and then I had Paul, and then Jen. So did it pretty quick. They were just a little pack, you know. And it's fun. I mean, if I had to do it again, I'd do it again. I really enjoyed it. But you have four children, same parents, everything, but completely four different personalities. And I'm going to talk about all of them just a little bit. So firstborn is my daughter, Dawn. And I don't mean to expose them at all. And they know that I teach these classes, so I think they're okay with it, you know. But Dawn is firstborn. She's very clever. She's smart. She is a female, but with a left brain. So she's very analytical. And I actually admire her tremendously because she can really think things through and she can memorize things very quickly. And she does, you know, I mean, she's just a really smart person, but she's still a girl. So it's interesting. So she's a lot like my husband, Michael, but she's a girl. And she doesn't have a lot of emotion. She's not super emotional. So she problem solves always analytically. So to me, that was very interesting, especially for firstborn. She didn't sleep very much. She took like 45-minute naps at the most, and it took me 45 minutes to put her down. So she was difficult for me for firstborn, because go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, and she still doesn't sleep. It takes her like 2 hours to go to sleep at night now, still. So I mean, that's who Dawn is. So she's very. She did life very calculated, is a good way to say it. So she was always very calculated. The second child, Amanda, was just the most tender, the sweetest little person. You could look at her cross-eyed and she would just melt on the floor, you know, and it was the end of the world, and we'd have to always like scoop her up, you know, and like put her back together, and she figured out very quickly that was just so much easier to just do whatever mom and dad said, because I don't want to get a spank. And so she just like, sure, okay. She never gave us one day ever of problems. I think my husband spanked her one time, and he said he felt so bad afterwards, because this little heart was just so tender and so gentle and so kind always. And she's a little person, like, can I have that? And she'll give you, you know, can I have a candy? And she'll give you the whole bag, you know, and that's just her person. And she's still that way. She's still just this tender, amazing, gracious little person. And then the Lord gave me Paul. And I wasn't prepared for him at all in any way. And he put it this way. When I gave birth to him, I went from 5 centimeters, and he was born like 20 minutes later. And I mean, he just, you know. And he never stopped. This kid never stopped. He was like the ever-ready bunny on steroids. And I know Amber's like, mm-hmm, you know, she's got one of those. This little boy was unbelievable. And as soon as he could get up and move, it started. And all these little rules about the candle, he would touch the candle anyway, and you'd give him a pat on the bottom, and then he'd get into a rage, and then he'd pick up the candle and throw it on the floor, kind of a thing, you know, and then we would deal with that. And then he would pick up my African violet and smash it all over the kitchen floor, and like, okay, so what you're gonna do about that, you know, or pull all the books off my bookshelf. And I mean, this child was unbelievable. People used to tell me all the time to medicate him, and, you know, that he was out of control and all these kind of things. But he was just a little person that had a ton of personality, a ton of energy, and he needed to know where all those boundaries were 100% of the time. You know, he was the kind of kid, you put him in a high chair and you give him his food, but his drink had to be here. It couldn't be here, it had to be here. And if you put it here, you know, it had to be here. And it was interesting. He was just an interesting person, you know. And then my husband so desperately wanted another boy, but I told him that the Lord knew exactly what I could handle. And so we got Jenny. and I was just really thrilled. Now, Jenny, so you think about all these personalities, her little personality, which is also very interesting, she's very tenacious. So it's like when she puts her mind to something, she does it 100%. You could call it stubborn, but I thought maybe tenacious might be a little better word, you know? So an example of her tenacity was, you know, you would say, Jenny, I'd like for you to put your shoes on. And so we, just a side note, we had a family live with us for a couple years. They were really struggling financially and in their marriage, and things were falling apart for them. So we had them in our home. They had 3 children. So we had 8 children underneath the age of, 7 children underneath of between 8 and 2. So we had a full home, and but we had them live with us. And so the husband, Jeff, they were our best friends, so we knew them very well. But the husband, Jeff, like within the first day or so, asked Miss Jenny here if she could please put her shoes on so they could go outside. No, she kind of decided that she wasn't going to do that. And she used to do this little thing. She would just like, no. But he didn't want to spank her the first day that they were there. So he decided that he would just ride this out, you know. I'm not exaggerating. 2 hours later, they were still sitting on the floor in front of her shoes, because she was still decided that she wasn't going to put her shoes on. And after a while, I'm like, what's going on out there? And I'd kind of walk by, and Jeff would look at me like, don't interrupt. And I knew that I wasn't going to. And Jenny's looking at me like, Mom, help me, because I was like, well, you have to listen to Jeff, sorry, you know, and then I'd have to walk by. But it took her about 2.5 hours. And then she decided, oh, okay, I'll put my shoes on now. And so she puts them on and she just goes out and starts playing. So, I mean, that's the kind of personalities that we're talking about. So, I mean, I think that, you know, we all have that huge spectrum of kids. We all have kids that they're going to be, you're going to go from the super compliant, you're going to go to the manipulators, you're going to go to the crazy, you know, 100% guys, or you're going to be, you know, to the kids that just want to be stubborn. They just want to ride it all the way out. So, you know, but the rules still are the same. It doesn't matter what personality they have. The rules are the same, and the same thing applies. But does Amanda, my second child, need to be disciplined the same way that my son Paul does? And the answer is no. And the reason for it is because the rules are all the same, and they all need to be disciplined. But does Amanda need to be have a spanking that Paul really needs? Because for Paul, if you just look at Paul cross-eyed, he couldn't care less, right? I mean, to him, that doesn't matter. But for Amanda, that's all she needed to realize, I'm so sorry, Mom, you know? And it was like, yeah, you know, you were a naughty girl. I know, I was, you know? And it's like, okay, you need to go to your room, okay. You know, and she'd go to her room. Well, Paul couldn't care less, you know. And Miss Sassy here, she probably couldn't care less either, you know. So the thing is that, you know, there's no formula for discipline. There isn't a formula, but it's the rules are the same. But you need to take a pulse on each child, and you need to ask the Lord, Lord, help me to discern what each child needs, because they're all individuals, and they're all their own unique little personalities. You know, so from the kid's standpoint, they all got disciplined. You know, if they all, I don't know, did something, it's best to just send them to their own room and you deal with them independently. And because Dawn doesn't have to know that Amanda didn't get a spanking, but Amanda didn't need one. She already was corrected just by her own little spirit, and she didn't need that. Where Paul, he needed a spank. And he is like, because for him, it was just who he is as a little personality, you know. I mean, someone like Dawn, you could talk to Dawn and say, Dawn, that's, you know, because she's a smart girl, verbal, you know, that was totally inappropriate. Do you understand this, that, and the other? Yes, I do. The Lord's going to give you insight on your children and exactly what they need. And you have to pray for that insight. Last week when Debbie was here, we talked about that pray for your children every single day. You know, you have to pray that the Lord will just give you the wisdom to raise these kids. And he will. He will give them to you. And, you know, Jenny was asking, when the kids were growing up in school, we did Moms in Touch, and we got together every week, and we sat below the schools, and we prayed over the schools and the classes and the teachers. We did that every week, that the kids were in school, and that we got together as a group of moms. And I really encourage you to do that. Even, I mean, if you're having hard times, just pray for your kids. Get together with other moms. Don't pray for, you know, Bob's uncle's mother. Pray for your children all the time. Just ask that the Lord would just really give you wisdom in how you're supposed to deal with this. And ask your husband to pray with you. You know, these guys are unique little people. I would also say that spanking is supposed to be kept for, keep it for the big ones, you know. I mean, sometimes moms just spank for everything. You know, they get 10 spankings a day. Well, it's kind of a hard thing to figure out, but, you know, for me, the ultimate was always a lie, was lying, you know, or you have the big ones, you know. I mean, if you're already spanking all the time and then something huge occurs, then you don't have anything left. And then plus, you don't always need to spank them all the time, you know. For my son Paul, just putting him in a timeout chair for 5 minutes was a killer. It killed him to have to sit still and be quiet for 5 minutes. I mean, it was, and I had a timer, and he'd sit there, you know. I mean, that was just a really tough thing, you know, or just sending him to his room. I mean, there was no one to talk to. There's nothing to do. If I sent her to her room, she was like, yay, see you in a few hours. And I mean, she loved being in her room, and she, you know, play with all her things. So that was not a discipline for her, you know. So you need to figure out your disciplining. And I really think keeping the spankings really is for the big things. Spanking spoons in your purse and in the car, yes. And, you know, the rules don't change. Remember the little Jenga blocks? You can't just pull one out and decide, oh, just because you're in the grocery store, it's okay if you behave this way. Because it's not. The rules stay the same. Doesn't matter where you are, they stay the same, and you be consistent. You follow your own rules, Mom. You know, that's what I mean, a double-sided discipline. Mom needs to be, you need to be disciplined yourself to discipline these children. Something that we hear about sometimes is moms getting angry. And that's just, for me, it's a tough one personally because I was raised with that. And, you know, anyone that's being raised in a tough home knows what that feels like. And you don't need to be angry with your children, and you don't need to be yelling at them or screaming at them to be in control. And I think it's really important that as we're teaching our children self-control, that we ourselves are self-controlled. You know, we're setting examples all the time. So, I mean, if you're coming unglued at your kids, how can you expect your children to not come unglued the first thing that happens to them? You know, and I think that the anger issue is something, you know, like it says in Ephesians 4, 26 and 27, in your anger, do not sin. And they're talking about anger being a sin. And do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. And I think it's really important that we remember that these are little people. We're shaping them, we're molding them, we're giving them a home that's a sanctuary, we're teaching them self-control, we're teaching them how to be a good wife. We're teaching them how to be a good husband. We're teaching them all these things, and that we need to demonstrate that ourselves. I think it's one of the biggest lessons I learned when I mean, I didn't have all this figured out 100%, that's for sure. I mean, we're all evolving. And when I was evolving, I mean, there was times when it was really hard for me. And our friends that lived with us, Jeff and Diane, they eventually moved out, and they are happily married, and they raise their kids and stuff. But I went through a season when it was really tough. And I would call them because they knew me just almost better than I knew myself. And they were friends that I could be absolutely real to, because they lived with us for a couple of years. And so they knew who we are, even at our worst type of thing. And I would call, and sometimes Diane would answer, but a lot of times Jeff would answer. He was more the counselor, and I would just like, oh, Jeff, it's just, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then he would say to me, so Paula, how much time have you spent with the Lord this week? And I was like, yeah, I know, but, you know, and you kind of go into it, and, you know, and he's like, Paula, you need to go spend some time with the Lord. Okay, and I'd hang up, and anyway, of course, a few days go by or a week or two go by, and hi, Jeff, it's Paula. And, well, you know, and he would listen to me for about a minute or two, and he would always say to me, Paula, how much time have you spent with the Lord this week? I was like, yeah, I know, but, you know. And I'm telling you, after a few times of calling him, eventually I got to the point where I picked up the phone and I thought, I know exactly what he's going to say, and I know exactly what I need to do. And I'm passing that on to you, because when your life starts falling apart, and you feel like, oh, I've got to call my friend, or I need to start whining, or I need to start, you know, doing something, it's like you really need to spend time with the Lord. And you need to tap into him, and you need to ask him to help you raise these kids. Because that's your lifeline right there. It's going to be a lifeline 100% of the time. And if you get angry, you need to do that all that much quicker. When you find yourself angry and yelling at your kids, you're not where you need to be. And you need to get out of that zone as quickly as you can. And remember that even if you blow it, you ask the Lord to forgive you. You ask the Lord, I need to start fresh. And every morning you start with a clean slate. He promises us that. And so that we don't stay there, because his compassion is new every morning, and that we need to remember that. Part of the thing too, that I'm sensitive to, I raised my children with, is I want to respect my children. And it doesn't matter if they're this high or this high or this high, or they're 6'4". They deserve to be respected. You know, when you see moms just slapping their kids or flicking them or doing those kind of things, I just feel so sad, because it's so disrespectful towards them. And we're trying to teach them to respect your elders, to respect each other. Again, if we're not demonstrating that behavior ourselves, then I think we're missing the mark. So I think it's really important, with the anger, the all these things that we, you know, can tend to do because we're frustrated. It's frustrating. It's tiring. It is all those things. But I think it's really important to remember that that we respect our children, and that we treat them how we want to be treated. You know, we don't go around and, you know, Judy, or, you know, but somehow people think it's okay to do that to their kids. And it's just something that I think it's just really, really, really important. How long do I keep spanking is a big question. I send my kids to public school. So for me, I was done with spanking by the time they went to kindergarten. Because I didn't want to send them to school with, you know, having had a spanking, or having a teacher find out, or having to, whatever it was. But for me, I didn't need to spank them past that age anymore either. So I was pretty strict with my kids. I mean, I'm being really honest with you. People would say sometimes that Polly is so strict with them. And it's like, well, you raise four kids under 5.5 years old, and you raise this little pack, and you have a Paul, and you have a Dawn, and you have all these little personalities. You guys know what that is. So for me, I was really strict with them. Not mean. I was just strict. This is the rule. If you break it, this is what happens. So we made it very straightforward. And I think for them, it just made it easier for them too. It makes it easy for everybody if this is what's expected of you. So by 5, not that we didn't have issues, obviously we did, but I didn't need to spank them anymore. We didn't get into big spanking past the age of 5. Now for some of you people, you might have to, or if your husband and you decide that's what you want to do, that's fine too. I know for the Metters, their bed, they were spanked until, you know, when they were older. And then when Joey got a lot older, then Brett spanked Joey and Debbie spanked the children, the girls. So you have to decide what's right for your family, you know. But it's easier to, when they're little, to be firm and to be strict and let the line out, than have them all running all over the place, and then you're trying to reel it all back in, and it's really difficult to do it that way. So we had a ton of fun. You can ask my kids. I played with them a tremendous amount. I've played video games. I can play console games. I can play World of Warcraft, and I can play with my children, and I like playing with them. I love spending time with them. So it wasn't all strict and rules, but it's kind of like in that basic little Jenga foundation that we set up, we had a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And we still do. We still play a ton of games and stuff too. So it's not all serious, but it's like in this solid foundation, in this thing in the middle, we can do these other things, and it just made things a lot easier. So, I know we're running out of time and we have some questions, but I think that the biggest thing that I can pass on to you is to set things up for them so that they're choosing whether or not they're going to obey you or not. It's a choice. It's simple. You either put your shoes on and we go play outside, or if you don't put your shoes on, you're going to get disciplined. Choose. Simple. And you can see them, because sometimes they're like, maybe I don't want to today. And that's like, fine, but it's your choice. Choose what you want to do. And it takes all the emotion out of it for us, and it's so much less exhausting. You know, then if sometimes they can put their shoes on, but sometimes they can't, or sometimes they can put their jacket on, and sometimes they can't, or sometimes they can do this, or because for them, they don't know what they're doing either. It's like potty training a dog. It's like, well, you can pee on the floor now, but later on, you're going to get in trouble, and from then on, you might need to go out. You know, you can't potty train a dog that way, and it's the same with the kids. Why raise kids that way? Just make the rules the same 100% of the time, and it's really going to make it that much easier for you. So, I have more, but I think we have some questions at the end. But I do want to just remind you, and I've said it already a couple times, but what you do every minute of your day with your kids counts. And it's valuable, and it's meaningful, and it really does matter. You feel like you have an endless job, but I can guarantee you, when you see your kids walking down that aisle, it really does something to you. And you realize that everything that you've done, every minute that you've spent with them, every discipline that you did, every choice that you've made counts for everything. Because after a bit, you're going to be like us and you have no kids at home. And your job's over. And you're now just looking in on them, hoping that they'll come visit you. You know? It's different. It's a different thing. So don't feel like this is endless. Don't feel like this is meaningless. Don't feel like, oh, this is a waste of time, or they're an inconvenience, or any of those things, because it's not. The Lord's given you a huge, huge blessing, and it's, you really get to raise them. And it is the most amazing job that you can possibly do. So put all your heart and all your soul into it, and just put everything you have into raising these kids. So it's the best job that you can do, the best thing that there is. Should we answer some questions? Where's Tani? What's that? You want to sit on it? It's actually kind of nice. You know what? It's so weird. Do you have the questions?
I do.
Oh, good. Actually, I think I might. Yeah? Yes.
It's going to be on the tape, right?
Yeah. You okay, Tiny?
I got it.
Here we go. Okay. I do have it. Okay. All right, so the first question is, how do I handle it when I see that my child is thinking of disobeying? Now, these are your questions. These aren't my questions. So just to let you know.
You just answered it.
I know.
And so yeah. I thought of that. When you see your child is thinking of disobeying, mm-hmm. you observe them.
Yeah.
And you see what they've decided, and you follow through. Mm-hmm. If they obey,
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
And you go on. But if they decide not to,
yeah. But with take my care of with it. My kids, I would see them. I'd say, well, you make the choice. And that choice word was a choice word, you know, because you could see them like, oh, that's right. You know, and so, and they would weigh it out because it's kind of like, it's simple, A or B, you know, or S, spanking, you know. I mean, you know, so just go figure it out, you know, type of thing. So, but if you see them weighing it up, in fact, I kind of loved it. She was a giveaway because it would be, and you could see her little thing and she could see her like weighing it out. It's like, well, Jenny, it's a choice, you know, you choose. And so, you know, yeah.
I also would, when my kids would decide to disobey, I would talk to them before I would give them a spanking if they mm-hmm. were actually disobeying me. Mm-hmm. But I would tell them, I'm sorry you chose
yeah.
to disobey me. To let them know it was their decision. And it's not just me being arbitrary, but that they made a conscious decision mm-hmm. to go against what I just told them.
Yeah.
And think of it this way. When they're away from you and they've got a choice to make,
mm-hmm.
if you jump in every time and keep them from making their own choice or making the choice for them, you know, they need to learn how to do this on their own. Mama can't jump in. You can't helicopter through their whole life. You got to watch them painfully mm-hmm. choose the wrong thing. And it will do your heart good when you see them grow up with integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The differences in raising boys versus girls.
There are many.
That's a good question,
yeah.
huh? Yeah. I wish Elisa was here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that are to, first of all, not stereotype your kids, because I always hear, oh, boys are rough and tumble and they're so hard mm-hmm. and girls are compliant and so easy, and that's just not the case. You know, it depends on the individual, and you need to go accordingly.
Well, you in your case, it was flipped, right?
Our case, Patrick was very, very compliant and mm-hmm. wanting to please, so laid back. Just Mr. Easygoing. And then Charlene came on the scene. She's filled with life and joy and fun and laughter, but she also, tenacious is that word you
yes.
use? She's tenacious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she also,
it's
yeah, you could
word.
Use the word.
Yeah.
It is a good word. Yeah. Stubborn could be used. Strong will, which can be directed mm-hmm. in the right way, can
yes.
be great. But I also was thinking about this, too. I think it's easier. Charlene was a gift to me in the respect that God gave me this girl that was so affectionate and loving, which I think a lot of times that can be easier with a girl. But to know, I remember how important it was to Patrick, too, to our son as he was growing up. And to just know that he could come up and just stand there and just hug me.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's that openness to keep that going. I think it's really important for boys that you don't detach from them. You also, the other thought that was coming, there's lots of thoughts that go through my mind on this, but Anyway, I was thinking of not swooping in with boys especially and cushioning all their life's experience. So that's where the dads are so great to come in and say, back off, mom, and let them be, you know, a boy. Mm-hmm. So that we're not stepping in and really kind of messing with their eventual manhood.
Did I already tell you guys about, well, stop me if I've heard it. My daughter has three sons, and she's listening to her oldest son talk about a playground experience.
No.
Okay. So he's saying, Mom, Alex is my best friend, and he didn't pick me for the team, and we always do this on the playground, and he was just heartbroken. And Danny's thinking, oh, poor Cody, you know, he's got to figure out a way to talk to him and see, you know, maybe there's something. Yeah. And so she starts to talk to Cody, and her husband, Tyler, comes in from another part of the house, and he says, sorry, Danny, no, Cody, tomorrow, you pick the team. You know, boys need to be, they do it differently, they think differently. Mm-hmm. And playground life is not like little girl life. And actually, I think a little girl should go and pick the team, too. But it's just that, you know, we go into mom mode. We go into mm-hmm. the emotions of it all. And sometimes a boy, when he stubs his toe, he needs to be told, you're okay, let's go.
Yeah.
More often or more quickly than a little girl. You know, it's just, it is
Although
different.
She was never a girly girl. So it was, just she was, ma'am. She
yeah.
was climbing the highest trees and the highest rocks, and, you know, that was Jenny, so it's kind of, you know, so I think it's also personality-based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how Charlene was, too. Very much tomboy.
Yeah. Yeah, question? Can you give her the, can you come up here?
Yeah, come.
Okay.
Oldest is in public school. He's 7.
We want to record this.
Yeah.
My oldest is 7 and in public school, and boy, very boy. Like, no question. And my youngest is 2, and I finally learned with him, just let him do it, and he's going to fall and maybe learn. My oldest is a little more protective, but we just had a conference this week, and he's doing amazing in school, but public school system does not encourage boys to be boys. So it's more of the, well, the boys were on the playground, and somebody was, you know, teasing another boy, and he got his feelings hurt, and I'm like, well, suck it up. You're a boy. He twisted his name differently. So as a mom sitting there listening to this, my husband was sick and he wasn't there, which was probably good because he just would tell the teacher, I don't care. I mean, mm-hmm. the boys deal with it. I did say, I just picked him up from school. And the friend I know you're talking about just said, hey, are we going to go to the playground? So the little boy already brushed past what the friends were saying. But the teacher, who is female and only has 2 daughters, is, you know, concerned about the sensitivity, and my son is actually very empathetic, but I sat there saying, okay, so what do I do? Because a teacher is, you know, making awareness of this group of 5 boys that play well together, but this stuff happens, and I'm like, she's saying it in front of my child, who I want to say to him, just suck it up and be a boy. I mean, you need to be kind, and you need to be a leader. So I say all these things, but what's your advice in a world that doesn't want boys to be boys, but I'm putting him out there, and I'm going to have that constant friction with the administration, I think.
Thanks. Okay.
Well, I think what you and your husband establish at home is what you teach your child. Mm-hmm. And like you said, we're in the world, and you don't want to purposely cause trouble at school, but what your rules always trump the school's rules. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yep. Okay. Let's have a look. How are we doing? Do you guys mind if we go a little over again like we did last time? Okay. I mean, if you feel like you need, Debbie did this last time, so we have permission. I know. How to handle it when attitudes change when a new school year starts?
My thought is is it Jenga blocks?
Yeah.
Well,
they're in place.
They're in place. And new school year, whatever, there can become excuses in life. And this is an important lesson for them when they become adults.
Yeah.
That just because life throws you the curveball does not mean you can just, you know, fall completely apart and everyone around you is miserable and you're raging or whatever. it may be, but that you need to still toe the line and stay the course. Yep. I just think that's really important. So when you start making way for attitude changes because this circumstance, so we're just going to ignore it. It would be totally unacceptable any other time, but now we'll just close our eyes to it because it's a new school year.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you just address it, point it out, talk to them about it, let them know this is what I'm seeing happening. It's a new school year, but listen, it's still the same home, and we're not pulling the blocks out of place.
You know, an extreme of that too is we moved all the kids to Holland. We moved them in 1999, so Jenny was 8 years old, so 8, 10, 12, 14 years old. We moved them to Holland. We dropped them into Dutch schools. They were bilingual in like 6 to 9 months. We did the whole thing. We moved back to the States after a few years. I mean, those are kind of things that are extreme cases of, you know, you move families, you do these major things with them. Do the rules change? No. You know, is it easy? Not necessarily. You know, did we go through a lot of changes and have to figure things out as a family? Absolutely. But it doesn't change anything. The rules still stay in place. You know, things don't change. It's our circumstances might be difficult, and we might have to work on things. But, you know, if you had that solid foundation, then it doesn't matter a whole lot what you do, because they're going to be stable and they're going to be comfortable with what's going on. So.
But that happens when school starts. You know, you have this nice cocoon of summer, mm-hmm. and it's your family, and maybe you've done a bunch of kids' camps mm-hmm. and stuff, and they go to come back from school, and unfortunately, they see stuff, and they come home, and they're going to try it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that doesn't mean you guys have to change.
And no.
Well, and it becomes really a good teaching opportunity for you with your kids. So not just to arbitrarily say, this is the rule, but to say, you know, this is what I'm seeing happening in your attitude, and this is why it concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
And go to the scriptures with your child. Mm-hmm. Don't underestimate the ability of the Word of God to mm-hmm. correct your kids. Really from the youngest age, just go to the Bible. But let them know why. I think it's important that they begin to understand that. Go ahead.
Can expectations or the bar be set too high? I struggle with how much to expect from my kids.
I think so. I think it's unreasonable to think a 4-year-old should read. I see that. 4-year-olds should still be 4-year-olds playing, and there's a lot of time for them to learn to read. Those kind of expectations, I think, are too high.
I was thinking about this, and that thought didn't come to me, but along those lines, I think it's where people have their kids in every sport imaginable, in everything. They're going to develop all of their amazing talents, and they're going to, it's like, what are you doing? Because everyone in the family is running ragged, and for what purpose? Where is it going to go? Mm-hmm. It causes a spiral down in the whole home, and let alone the pressure that's on your child. So in that respect, I think the bar can definitely be set too high. I think it's another thing where we've talked about the wisdom of the Lord. Pray for wisdom to know what it is that you should be expecting from your kids. I think when it comes along the things, along the lines of what Paul is talking about tonight, 100% of the time you're going to ask them to and expect them to obey you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a bar that's set too high. You need to keep it right there. Mm-hmm. That's really, really important. So it's learning to discern between what the world tells you mm-hmm. is important and you've got to do all these things versus what God is telling you is important.
And I think husbands are very good at that too, because they can just look at something and go, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know, and that we listen to our husbands mm-hmm. or listen. If you're single, then listen to your counsel, you know, sometimes, you know, the husbands are wonderful for that kind of thing.
I think you need to put the blinders on and stop looking about what she's doing or she's doing, mm-hmm. that family, and just
for
pray
me and my
about,
house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. me and my house.
Yes.
And that's really the only way to do it. And it's such a trap for women to decide that somebody else is the standard. And it's God's standard, your husband and your family's standard.
Yeah. The last question is, how do you address siblings leaving each other out of play? Now this...
There was only two in my family.
I know. I was thinking that. So because we had the two... And then the two, you know, the two elder girls were 18 months apart, and they tended to do stuff more together, right, Jen? And then we had the boy, and then we had Jenny. So I think Jenny was always kind of looking up to the big, you know, to the big girls, and wanting to be included in that. You know, just because of the age difference, it's always it is a little bit of a factor. And as a mom, you can see that. You know, the two girls have, you know, their little stuff going on here, and there's Jenny looking in on that. But I think that, you know, it's when they get a little older, that age gap for some reason just shrinks, and then they just, you know, they just move on together. But I remember just allowing the girls to have their time. The girls were the older two, their time to be able to do stuff with just the two of them. But at some point you're like, okay, you guys have had hours together, now you need to go play with your siblings. And so I intervened and kind of tried to split that up. I don't know how much of a good job I did, but I remember at least making that effort. But it was an issue. I mean, right, Jenny? Right. Because it tended to be more like Dawn and Amanda and then Paul and Jenny. It's just because of the age. You know, so, and she tended to be more of not the girly girl anyway. She was, you know, she's, you know, much more outdoorsy and outgoing and everything. So that kind of worked, but yeah.
With having just two kids and a boy and then a girl, I just tried to talk to the kids about do unto others, that kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And I would try to approach it that way, which they would get it. They really do. I mean, when you really sit them down and you're talking about, would you want to be treated that way? Is that how you would like to be treated? Even from a little tiny kid, they can get that and understand that, no, that's not what I want to have happen to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think to instill compassion and trying to show your kids that they are to esteem others as higher than themselves. And to begin that very, very young. And so that it's not just winked at and let go, if you can at all help it. I think sometimes, though, this thought's coming to my mind, when a child has friends come into the house to play, and it's their friends and stuff, I don't know that it always has to be a big group effort. I think that they can have some individual time where they're able to spend some time with their friends, and that's an okay thing, too. It doesn't have to mean someone's, you know, excluded and that it's a big, bad deal. It's just part of life.
But I think, too, as moms, we can always mediate as well. You know, we know. We can see what everyone's doing and do it that way, so... Just one more thought that I had that I just realized that I didn't, that I still want to share. When you have kids or you have a child and you ask them, hey, I want you to come inside now. Could you please go put your toys away? And then I want you to do this and then do that. But they decide, well, I don't want to come inside. And they have a big tizzy fit or whatever on the first thing that you've asked them to do. You have to make sure that they do every single one of those things that you ask them to do. We don't need to bypass and go from A to D. We still need to do B, C, and D. If between A and B we start flipping out and we start having a temper tantrum, then we just made a little diversion, and we need to deal with a temper tantrum before we deal with B. If we get to B and something else happens, we need to deal with that before we get to C. You can't bypass stuff and just let it go under the carpet. You can't do that. You're losing your foothold. So that's just something that's just really important, in that you make sure that you follow through. And I know you have multiple kids, and I know it's a full-time job sometimes, but it's really, really important that even along the way that we have rolling of eyes, or that we slam a door, or that we do any one of those things, everyone's shaking their heads and stuff, that you deal with each one of those things as you're going along, okay? It's just, that's part of the 100% thing. Anyway, I just remembered that I wanted to share that, so. We just close in prayer. Father, thank you for this evening, Lord. And Father, I just thank you for each lady that's here, Father, and we just thank you so much for your word, Father, for I know, Lord, that you are ready to hear us. You're ready to listen to prayers, Lord. You're ready to help us. Father, I pray that each woman here would know that she's never alone in raising these beautiful children. Father, that you're always standing ready 100% of the time to help. And Father, and encourage and give energy and to give joy, to give all the things that we need to raise these children. Father, I pray that each woman would learn so quickly to depend on you for everything that they need to be a mom. Father, that they understand, Lord, that we can't raise them without you. We are nothing, Lord. We are no good moms without you, Father. That you are our all in all in raising these kids. So, Father, I pray tonight that each woman has heard something directly from you. Father, that something's just so personal that she can go home and make a difference, Lord. But more importantly, that that the women understand, that we all understand how much we need you on a moment-by-moment basis, Lord, and to be great moms and to be great wives, Father, to be a great grandmother. Father, we just pray that we are godly moms and godly wives and godly grandmothers, Father. And Father, we just pray that what we do is truly pleasing to you, that we do put our whole heart, our whole soul, our whole mind into this amazing job that you've allowed us to do. So Father, we thank you for these evenings, Lord, that you would just bless these ladies over Easter break. And until we meet again, Lord, we just thank you for your word and your guidance, Father, your love and your care that you have for us. In Jesus' name, amen.